We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
We are breaking down all aspects of Yankee baseball. This is the Bronx Pinstripe Show with your hosts, Andrew Rotondi and Scott Reinen. Let's go.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to the Bronx Pinstripe Show. Another miserable weekend of Yankees baseball. They lost 2 out of 3 to the Mets. Sunday night was just a, to cap it all off, Scott, we've said this before, like after the Houston thing when they blew that final game before the All-Star break. This Yankees team, the 2021 Yankees, never get the last laugh. And they didn't get the last laugh last night with the Stanton Lindor stuff. They didn't get the last laugh in Houston when Chad Green gave up the 3-run home run to Altuve. This team routinely gets pantsed, and they got pantsed again on Sunday Night Baseball last night.
Hey, Chad Green gave up a home run to bring it all together, gave up a home run that ended up being a deciding run of the game. Guy consistently coming in at the end of the game in a tight game, one run, tie game, and giving up the lead. It's happening over and over and over again. And it just so happened that it was Lindor's third home run after all of the hoopla in the middle of the game that was stemmed from Saturday. You know what? They won on Saturday. And to be honest, walking into this series, I was talking to some Mets fans via text message. And I was like, this is prime opportunity for the Mets to come in and sweep again. They're playing that badly. They're playing, the pitching staff is just absolutely shot to shit. So I didn't really even see the Yankees winning a game. They would have had to slug. They would have had to go nuts offensively to win a game. And, Judge did on Saturday. Judge played amazing on Saturday and actually won them that game. But yeah, I was expecting them to lose all three, to be honest. Those were my expectations walking into the weekend.
If your expectations were 0-3 and they went 1-2, then I guess they exceeded your expectations. Yeah. But I wouldn't call it a good weekend.
Bad weekend. Still a bad weekend of baseball. Another bad weekend of baseball. And they got to turn around. Do you think, hold on. You know what's today, though? You know what today is?
Minnesota.
They play the Twins. Every time the Twins come in, it's been, well needed.
If the Yankees don't
win today against the Minnesota Twins, even after...
Who cares if they win today against the Minnesota Twins, though?
Because it's a sign. It's a sign. If they don't win today against the Minnesota Twins, we got very serious problems for the rest
of the 19, 18 games. We're sitting here on September 13th and the Yankees are outside of the playoffs looking in. You don't think we've got problems?
Yeah, that's not good. What have they given up? Like, I think they gave up 10 and a half. I think I saw somewhere 10 and a half games. They've given up to Toronto in the last 16.
It's almost
in the last 16 days or 16. Yeah, it's crazy.
Almost mathematically impossible. And they've got more games against Toronto on the schedule. And they've got more games against Boston on the schedule. And Tampa, not that that matters. Tampa's just,
it's just a good team. It's just another good team on the schedule, though. It's another good team on the schedule.
And damn well, if the Yankees need to win like 2 out of 3 the last weekend against Tampa, even if Tampa has nothing to play for, they will fucking crush your soul that last weekend of the season.
They'll do it offensively. They don't even need to position themselves pitching-wise because everybody can pitch on that team. They'll do it offensively. That's the problem. Yeah.
Yeah. So do not plan to go into that last weekend of the season needing to win a couple games against Tampa to get into the playoffs, because that will not be easy. But I want to start, for all the shit this weekend, I want to start with perhaps the worst play of Gary Sanchez's career.
Yeah.
When he the ball beat the runner on Friday night by
25 feet.
Like, it was insane.
It wasn't 25 feet, but yes, it was a lot.
Whatever it was like significantly beat the runner. And he's just lackadaisical trying to tag the guy up high as he's like, the runner doesn't even know what he's trying to do. He's like, do I slide? Do I just run into this tag because I'm out by a mile? And Gary Sanchez tries to tag him up by the neck and the foot slides in safe and they replay. And that's a moment. There's been moments with Gleyber Torres over the past couple of weeks where he just looks lazy in the field. That's a moment. And I know this isn't technically smart managing because you don't pull your starting catcher and then go to your backup catcher, because then what happens if there's an injury, then what do you do? But that is a moment, like we talked about with the accountability, and there's no accountability on this team. That is a moment where Aaron Boone needs to say, Gary, you're done tonight. That is an unacceptable, lazy, bad baseball play, and we cannot win baseball games with lazy, bad baseball play. So you're up coming off the field, like he should have done with Gleyber Torres against Baltimore when he just took his sweet-ass time trying to field a routine ground ball. Yank him, sit him on the bench, let the cards fall where they may. And it didn't matter because the Yankees got stomped anyway on Friday night, but that was embarrassing.
He caught the ball in a position where he could have made a tag and didn't actually have to move at all, where he caught the ball. It was a great throw. It was a great throw by Gallo. He was out by a mile. And yeah, he thought that the other guy was going to be lazy and just walk into him. And no, that's not what happened. There was actually a slide, he manipulated his body in a way because he realized that Gary Sanchez was not doing anything to make a tag on him, and that he could sneak under the legs and get that foot in. And he did exactly that. I tweeted about that right after it, saying that it was probably the worst tag attempt I've ever seen in my life, because I think that's actually accurate. It was pitiful. It was absolutely pitiful. He got out of the way. I don't know how much of that is he was trying to give him the base path, but it actually doesn't matter if you know the rules at that point. Once the ball is there, you can just tag. You could just do what you need to do. Didn't happen. No, it was terrible. It was really bad. It was really
awful. And those are the types of plays that this team makes on a regular basis. And it's the reason that this team maybe won't make the playoffs and definitely won't win in the playoffs, is because they're mentally a bad, stupid baseball team. That's a mentally weak play. And they've got a bunch of players on the field that are mentally weak. They've got a couple who I think are mentally strong or strong enough anyway, but in key spots, catcher, shortstop, mentally weak. And that's a huge problem.
Going back to Jeter, the week that was like refreshing in this nonsense, Derek Jeter complimented and gave a lot of credit to Gary Dembo and the other guy whose name is eluding me right now as far as player development. And one of the things that he specifically mentioned was drilling fundamentals, making sure that they always went back to fundamentals, making sure that they always did the little things so that they could succeed.
Yeah, it's Derek Jeter's career maybe was defined by the little things. Obviously, he had unbelievable career numbers and championships, but the reason that he was able to achieve those over the long was because he always did the little things right. And when we did that countdown of the Jeter top five moments, the number one play, what was the number one play? It wasn't a home run, wasn't a walk-off home run. It was a defensive play that no one had ever seen before because he did the little thing right and was in the right place at the right time. And that's just lacking from this team. And, you know, Joel Sherman wrote an article over the weekend, and I tweeted about it. I kind of gave him some shit. Joel Sherman, I actually really like and normally go to him as a good source. But he's like, he compared the 2021 Yankees struggling right now to the 2000 Yankees, who had one of the worst Septembers of the 90s, 2000s run. They had a terrible September. And they limped into the playoffs and they flipped the switch, they turned it on, they won a World Series. And he's like, oh, maybe this Yankees team can do that. Are you kidding me, Joel? That team in 2000 was defending back-to-back World Series champions. They had Derek Jeter and Bernie Williams and Mariano Rivera and Andy Pettit and Roger Clemens and Paul O'Neill on that roster. What does this team have? What has this team ever won? They've got one championship that's actually theirs in Brett Gardner. He was on the 2009 team. That might as well be another lifetime ago because no one else is on the team anymore. And he was a role player. And they've got a couple of players that were on the Chicago Cubs. That's what they have as far as winning pedigree in that locker room, in that clubhouse. And Joel Sherman's comparing the 2021 Yankees to the 2000. Fuck out of here with that. I'm done comparing things to the 90s Yankees. We're never going to see that again in our lifetime. That was a once-in-a-generational run that they went on with once-in-generational players like Derek Jeter and Mariano Rivera. That maybe they'll win another championship, but they are not going to be the 1990s Yankees. Let's stop thinking they're going to be.
I mean, that ship has sailed long ago, but the I thought you were going to mention when you said that they have championships on the team that you were going to go back to, like, you know, the Trenton Thunder championship.
Oh, yeah, right. Or, the minor league championships.
Yeah, yeah. All the ones that they won together in the minor leagues of the Yankees.
But who did any of the players on the roster win those? Like, I know Clint Frazier was on a couple of those teams.
No, I think it happened when Judge was
already
coming up.
Called didn't they up? No, Judge was already called
didn't
up.
Didn't they win in Tampa? They won in all three.
They won in 2017, the Scranton Championship in 2017. Judge was not on that roster.
They won in the Trenton Thunder, and they won also in Tampa as well. I'm saying they came up together winning. Greg Bird has a couple of championships underneath there.
Tyler Wade's got all the –
oh, yeah, probably, Tyler Wade's he's probably consistent. Got a ring He's case. Probably the one consistent guy
do they
of
get
all
a
of
ring?
The championships.
Do you get a minor league ring, or do you just get like a T-shirt? Coupon to Dave & Buster's?
I don't know what you get. Is Dave & Buster's still in business?
Yeah, there's
speaking
one
of Tyler Wade.
I saw one at the mall. I drove speaking past
of,
the
they still have malls? Speaking of Tyler Wade, that's a guy that just hasn't been existent.
Just start him at shortstop.
Finally, he gets in a game last night running the bases after DJ gets on in the ninth, being the tying run after the first pitch of the at-bat.
Classic. Classic Boone. It's like Boone's just like is sitting there looking at the game but not actually watching what's happening in the game. And then someone taps him on the shoulder, be like, do you want a pinch run here? Oh, yeah, I do want a pinch run here. Tyler, go in, Tyler.
This is exactly what happens. So the person who's thinking of it, whoever that is in the dugout, is like, he's going to do it. And then a pitch goes by. He's like, shit, he's not going to do it. I got to say something. And then he sends him in. That's exactly what happens. That's exactly how it goes down, right? Everybody in the dugouts is like, oh, manager's going to do it. It's like, clearly, DJ's on first. Tyler Wade's on the bench. Like, run. We have Diaz, who can't hold anybody on base. Run. And no. You got to waste the pitch first, then go out and do it.
How many times has that happened in Boone's
Talk
Yankees
about the little things, man.
But how many times has that exact thing happened? I feel like we've complained about him not pinch running until there's already a pitch thrown in the at-bat like 10 times over the past 3 years.
Yeah, I don't get it. Especially in that situation, it's just like, you know, the most clear, obvious thing to do. You need to tie the game. You have one of the fastest guys on your bench. Guy who's throwing the ball at the given moment is terrible at holding runners on. People are stealing about on him consistently. At a very high clip, and you have a guy on first base with less than two outs. It's like there's no other reason for Tyler Wade to be sitting on the bench. Yeah, it's another one of those chalk up to Aaron Boone just not being in a moment.
He doesn't get it, and the game moves too fast for him. Like again, to talk about Derek Jeter, everyone said the game slows down for Derek Jeter. That's why in the playoffs he was always nails. The game speeds up for some guys. Maybe it sped up for A-Rod, and then A-Rod was one of the most talented baseball players in history. But when it came time to playoff time, game sped up for him, and he choked quite often. And for Aaron Boone, sitting in the dugout managing, the game speeds up for him. And then you pinch run when it's already a pitch thrown in the at-bat. I want to talk about Gleyber and Wade, because like you brought up Tyler Wade. And I don't see a reason at this point. I know they sent down Velasquez to call up Clark Schmidt. I don't see any point to starting Gleyber Torres anymore. No, he hit a home run last night. I don't care. I tweeted out, he's got a 660 OPS, which is awful, and he's perhaps the worst defensive shortstop in baseball. What is the point to playing him at this point? He does nothing to help you win.
Well, I mean, he did hit a home run last night, like you said. So the offensively, he hasn't been as bad as, you know, we've... over the last 30 days, just I was looking at some numbers because I was curious as to where he was. Because it really feels bad, right? Like, the vibe is it feels bad because he's bad defensively. He's been booting balls left and right. Last night, he had another easy ground ball. It was like a Sunday hop into your glove, and he booted it. People were like, it was a bad bounce. It wasn't a bad bounce. It was a Sunday hop that literally was, like, right into the breadbasket. should have been a very easy play.
Bad bounce. He's a Major League Baseball player. Field the ball.
Either way, it doesn't matter. Yeah, it was actually an easy bounce that was just bad. But no, the power hasn't been there. I mean, last 30 games, he's got 4 home runs. But overall, when you look at what he's been doing since he's come back.
Those 30 games were before he was injured. So look at
since
his
injury. You're right. Last 7 and last 15, he's hitting, he's getting on base, but there's no power. There's no power. So
I think I pulled numbers.
He's not giving much more than Tyler Wade. In fact, if you run the numbers, Tyler Wade's probably offensively playing better.
I don't care if Tyler Wade is not performing. He can field the ball at shortstop. I pulled numbers from Gleyber Torres, I think, for the last episode. When did he return? I mean, it's not a huge sample. He returned on September 3rd is when he returned from injury. Okay, I'm going to get his numbers from September 3rd.
And the other thing about the defensive problems is that they consistently lead to other issues as defensive problems do. They are extra outs. Yesterday, Gleyber boots a ball. Next batter, or a couple batters later, I forget if it was the next batter or the one after.
It was two later. Lindor hits.
It was two later because Lindor hit. It was a 3-run home run. Lindor hits a shot. What does that do? It adds more pitches to Clark Schmidt, who I actually thought pitched decently. Take away that home run, and he pitched better than he had. And you know,
take away a 3-run home run. Yeah, okay.
I'm saying you scrub some of that stuff. You give him the situation differently. I don't think he executed all that bad. It was a bad pitch, and Lindor destroyed it. But overall, I thought he was better. Again, expectations are pretty low at this point for certain things. So
Clark Schmidt's working back from injury. I'm not gonna.
He also didn't give him any chance to succeed. When you do that, there were two balls booted over there. Gio booted another ball to the left side. So
not
Clark Schmidt didn't. Nobody helped him out.
We said this on Friday Fives. Gio Urshela injured, clearly injured, not healthy. Take him off the field. Play Odor at third base. Gleyber Torres does not do enough to help you win. Play Velasquez or Tyler Wade at shortstop. That is what this team needs to do right now. Gio Urshela, so Tyler Wade replaced for defense on Saturday. Gio, not Gleyber. That tells me Gio's not healthy. Because if all things are equal and Gio is healthy, he doesn't get replaced for defense. Right?
No. In fact, he's on occasion slides over. And if there was somebody available to play third base, he would slide over to short.
So what more evidence do we need that I don't think Gio is healthy?
He does not look healthy. He's making these plays in the field that he's just not characteristically making. These are uncharacteristic plays that he looks off for sure. His legs aren't there. He's not getting in position. There's something going on with him. There's no doubt. So lingering.
He looks terrible at the plate. Since Gleyber's return from injury, he has 7 hits and 31 plate appearances, .233 batting average. He has the one home run, which was last night. He did have a decent weekend offensively. He had 4 hits this weekend. But again, I'm not Gleyber's offense has been a gigantic disappointment. We know. But I'm just saying, this team needs something steady at shortstop, the most important infield position.
Yes. You can't mess around with shortstop. You cannot mess around with shortstop. And absolutely, you need someone out there who can play. This is why there are so many defensive shortstops in the league that have jobs that are not starting position players. The most important position on the infield. You need to have someone solid up the middle. And if you don't, you're in big trouble. And that's exactly what happened last night. And a 3-run shot was the result of it. You know, Clark Schmidt threw the pitch, hung a knuckle curve or whatever it was over the middle of the plate, no doubt about it, bad pitch, but should not have been in a position to even throw that pitch.
It's demoralizing to your pitching staff and to your team, the mistakes that Gleyber makes in the field. Last night, like you said, routine ground ball to shortstop. Clark Schmidt's thinking, I got a routine ground ball to shortstop, booted. Last weekend against Baltimore, Abreu, I got a routine ground ball to shortstop. What does Gleyber Torres do? Takes a sweet-ass time and the runner's safe. That should, even if it shouldn't affect you mentally as a pitcher, how could it not? I got an easy ground ball and my shortstop can't field it.
You're just mentally thinking that you're on to the next one with an out. Like in your head, as soon as that ground ball is gone, you're like, okay, great, did my job. On to the next one, let's go. And then you have to reset yourself to now, because not only that, now you're pitching, from the stretch, you're doing a very different thing. There's a lot of things that change when there's a runner on first base.
Who is going to oppose to Gleyber just sitting the bench the rest of the year? Like
nobody. You're talking about the fan base? Nobody.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Fan base. It's just, you know, and do you want us to talk about Judge next? Or do you want to talk about the Stanton Lindor stuff?
Well, Judge, I think, we have to address what happened with Judge. We don't know what happened with Judge.
Yeah,
it
dizziness.
Looked like he had a hair in his eye, some dirt in his eye, something in, you know, they stopped the game. He definitely had something going on and it took a long time. Like he was talking to them for a while. So maybe it wasn't something in his eye in that very moment. He just thought it was, and it was just like cloudy or whatnot, but he left the game a little bit later
because of dizziness. That's scary.
Not great. Not good. Yeah.
Like what's going on there? Like he obviously had a huge game on Saturday and he made the diving catch. I don't know. Did he hit his head when he made that diving catch? Okay.
No,
I know. I'm saying like, I know he dove. So like there's some bounce or whatever.
Very well could have literally been something in his eye or some weird thing that just like wouldn't go away. And label it dizziness.
Yeah.
We'll see what happens today. If he's in the lineup, then much ado about nothing.
But he just said dizziness after the game. And he did address the team after the Toronto loss. And it didn't, you know, did it do anything? I don't know. It's tough to say. Immediately, they went out and got stomped by the Mets on Friday night. So the immediate result wasn't good. But he did then put the team on his back on Saturday to back up his, quote, leadership. Like I said at the top of the show, this team just doesn't get the last laugh. They continue to get embarrassed. And the stuff with Lindor last night. So the situation, if you're unaware, is that the Mets were mad on Saturday that they thought the Yankees were whistling from the dugout, which was relaying signs to the hitters. And they thought Taijuan Walker was a victim of tip pitching / whistling in that inning that he gave up the 3 home runs. And you know what? The only one that is a little suspicious was the Higgy home run. Like that's a tough pitch to hit. And he was all over a fastball at his neck. Okay. I'm not saying they were or weren't stealing signs, but that's the only one that was a little suspicious. He hung a pitch to Judge and he hit it to the freaking moon. But so when Lindor hits the home runs on Sunday, he does whistling gestures as he's rounding the bases. Obviously, the Yankees were pissed about that. Stanton then hits the home run and he chirps at Lindor rounding the bases. Bench is clear, and it's a whole big thing.
Bench is clear is very, very liberal way to say they walk
as out long as if players are on the field, benches are cleared. Okay, as far as I'm concerned. And you're
how about all the pictures of like for the 9/11 ceremony and all of the, you know, all of the togetherness and unitedness of Saturday, and then pictures of them jawing and fighting each other on Sunday. It's just kind of...
Well, you know what? The benches had to clear for them to unite on the 9/11 ceremony.
Well, there you go, too.
So, but of course, Lindor gets the last laugh off Chad Green. Hits the home run. That's the game-winning home run. Chirping as he rounds the bases. Yeah, that's what happens. So, when you chirp, you got to win. Bottom line.
Well, chirp like whistle? Or chirp as in talk? Because... Let me ask you a question. There's a very fine line here and some gray area. And I have to give credit where credit is due, as I did with Aaron Boone in the three opportunities I had this year after the trade deadline when they were just on a scorched earth thing. It actually had nothing to do with it. A-Rod was actually not that bad last night, I thought, which is saying something because he's always usually very
he's
much
a
bothering
giant,
me.
He's a diehard Mets fan.
Yeah, you're flagging this as if it was the first time he said this. Like, he does talk about this consistently. We all know he's a Mets fan. We all know he grew up with the Mets. Makes a lot of sense. Now, he was shitting all over like the new wave of hitting in baseball with, making more contact. He was saying that Paul O'Neill wouldn't be a player that the Yankees would be interested in anymore because he makes too much contact. I thought that was a gold quote. I thought he was doing a very good job at shitting all over the way that that baseball is approached swing, home run or nothing. And I thought it was entertaining. So maybe it's just because he was on my agenda points and I thought it was interesting. And it's rarely that we're on the same
page. Hold on, did you email him the agenda points before the game?
No. And then he read them, from the script. No, but the fine line is the tipping pitches, right? Because obviously what the Astros did a couple years back and, what is okay in baseball? There are the unwritten rules that we all talk about that some people get nauseated about, but they exist. And they've been less enforced, I think, over the years, just because people aren't pitching inside as much. There's less policing is seemingly on the field itself. But tipping pitches has been part of the game, and looking for tells has been part of the game forever, and it will always be part of the game. It's a matter of how you relay it to your teammates. And going back to what A-Rod was talking about on the broadcast last night, if there's a guy on second base or there's motions, hand signals, and you're telling it, like, all of that is kosher. Non-kosher, noises, things coming from the dugout, whistling, things like that. Non-kosher, as far as the on-the-field way of handling said tips. So whether he was tipping his pitches or not, whether the Yankees were whistling or not, they say they weren't. Apparently, it was Wandy Peralta firing everybody up.
They threw Wandy under the bus. Stanton throws him under the bus. Oh, I think it was Wandy Peralta who was whistling.
Gallo talked about Wandy. They talked about Wandy because he's loud.
Wandy's the fall guy.
He's just loud in the dugout, and it pisses them off, and he just gets under their skin. And Gallo said it hurts his ears and all of these things. It sounded like very much like, okay, here's the story, guys. Wandy was pitching. He was also in the dugout at this time. So let's just go with this. He does whistle. Or he was the guy that was probably whistling because he could do it the loudest. We knew
surprised
that.
Surprised they didn't call it on Tyler Wade. Tyler Wade. He's party boy. He's used to making some noise.
Well, Wandy gave up the home run, so it made a lot of sense if that were the case. And if that were the case, because they knew it was him. You know, if Lindor hit the home run off of Wandy, was doing it as he was running the bases, knew that Wandy was the one whistling, that does make sense. That checks. It's just a matter of why he was whistling or if the whistling was intentional. That's more to the point, because I think Wandy probably was the guy whistling, if that is what
The narrative doesn't look good for the Yankees. They score 5 runs, 3 home runs off of Walker, and then he retires 16 in a row.
Yo, I have very mixed feelings. I actually don't have that many mixed feelings about this, to be honest. I don't know why I said that. The whole whistling and the on the field, between the lines stuff, I get it. I understand it. But I'm also a big believer of policing it between the lines. If somebody does something within the rules, then you should police it on the lines, and you should have something to say about it. And they did the next night. But you know what? Tywon Walker's tipping his pitches. Yankees picked up on the tipping his pitches. They took advantage of it. There's no camera out there. There's no guy out there. There's no spotter. That's not happening. They picked it up from the dugout, and they told their guys that this was happening.
But here's the thing.
And they took advantage of it.
But if they pick something up, you're right. But then how and why are they relaying it from the dugout? If they pick something up, then they just have to tell the hitter, oh, his glove dips when he's going to throw an off-speed pitch. So just look for that. Doesn't need to whistle every single time from the dugout. The only time you signal from the dugout is when you're getting something the batter can't see, like with Houston.
That's a good point. So if you're whistling from the dugout, then and they haven't given the actual tell on why something is happening, then yeah, you're not wrong there. So there could be some muddiness of how that happened if that is the case. But they were in an opposing ballpark.
I don't think they were relaying information. I don't think Wandy Peralta was relaying information about Walker's tipping.
Do you think all of the post game comments being were annoying. Bullshit?
No. I don't think. I mean, yes, he was whistling. Okay, but I don't think he probably was not whistling to steal signs, because again, like you said, how would they have stolen the sign? I mean, I guess you can't put it past them to have technology that is now like that now Major League Baseball to know about, but like they don't know.
They're
longer
in the
have,
opposing ballpark. They're not
but
in
they
their
no
own
longer
ballpark.
But they no longer have access to the replay room like they used to. Yeah. So it would have to be from someone,
the old Ty Cobb telescope from another building,
or it would literally have to be from someone outside of the clubhouse being like, hey, we figured this out, gets the information into the clubhouse. But then why is Wandy Peralta the one doing it? It's just
hand signals from the bullpen.
Although I'm not going to put it past, because like who would have thought that the Astros were slamming trash cans and look what they were doing. So yeah, I'm not going to put it past anyone to cheat, especially Major League Baseball players, because they're a bunch of fucking cheaters. However, he was whistling. The Mets were mad about it. That's why
they
Lindor
came out there, addressed it. They did. There was a visit to the mound that was clearly about something that was happening in the moment.
And then he shut them down.
Yeah.
Yep. So maybe he was tipping and the batters were figuring it out, and that's why they hit the 3 home runs. And then he shut them down.
So here's the thing. Here's a scenario that could happen. And I want to lay it out a little bit because people are like immediately go to the cheating thing. Clearly, you're like, obviously we're conditioned for that now with what the Astros have done to us. When I say us, I mean baseball and baseball fans. But if you have a guy that's out there getting rattled, getting tipping his pitches, and the Yankees know what it is, then you have another guy who's just whistling his ass off, just being freaking
that's
annoying,
stupid.
Just trying to be distracting, because we know that he's tipping his pitches, so we don't want that to stop. We want
that's going to make it stop. That's going to make it stop.
Look at the birdie. They scored five runs. They scored five runs on him. So
if you figure out someone's tell in poker, you don't tell them you figured out his tell.
Or you be as obvious as possible where they think you know, and now you're playing mind games. And no. He gave up three home runs.
Right. You let him continue to pitch the same way so you can continue to hit him. You don't start whistling from the dugout, which is obviously going to get the opposing team's attention. And then they're going to say, what's going on? Why are they whistling?
Yeah, maybe. Or maybe you think that when he goes back into the dugout, they're gonna rectify the situation anyway. Let's get as much as we can. I'm just throwing shit out there because clearly they were trying to be distracting. And it was working if they were not signaling pitches back to the batter with a whistle. But no one will ever admit that in a million years, ever, because they know it's against the written rules.
Why do you think this team never gets the last laugh?
Because they're not,
you think it's coincidence?
They're not good at executing?
Yeah. I think, yeah. I mean, that's probably what it comes down to.
Chad Green has given up how many home runs at the end of the game? How many, what's his win? I mean, we don't look at win-loss records for starting pitchers. But when you look at it for a relief pitcher that consistently comes from the seventh inning and on, and you have a losses, I don't care about wins, but you have
high-profile blown saves too. Yes, you're probably right. It's lack of execution that ultimately is the reason. But you'd think eventually one of these is going to go the Yankees' way. Even if you don't execute, you'll get lucky once or twice. And they haven't been lucky. And it's, yes, lack of execution. I also think they're a mentally soft team.
You're looking at these moments that are convenient. They've had triple plays in the past. They did sweep Toronto
I'm talking about key moments, mm-hmm. right? That could be that are like last night with Lindor and Stanton, or like in Houston when Aaron Judge mocks Jose Altuve, right? I'm talking about these types of key moments that they fail after these moments happen. I'm not talking about just turning triple plays or coming back or winning 13 in a row. I'm talking about key fire your team up moments, potentially turning point moments.
We're calling them turning point moments though. Like when you look at what happens. So the Yankees, I don't know if this includes this past weekend. I actually don't think it does, but 61 games around there. Okay. That have been decided by two runs or less. Tied for the most, and I think the Mets are up there as well for this. But they're 39-22 in those games. 19-11 in one-run games. So I could argue the complete opposite when you're looking at, you're just talking about high-profile, people that are being...
emotional moments.
Emotional moments. More easily covered, ones that are like because of the Astros, because it's...
Those are important. The Field of Dreams game is another example where... It's a nationally televised game. All eyes on that game. It's a unique situation. They actually come back and take the lead only to have their freaking now injured closer blow it.
Yes, I know that. They are not good. I will say this. This is sometimes I think where the eye test though comes back and makes it feel worse than it actually is in the grand scheme of things. Because when you look at their record in tight games, it's good. So they are executing in a lot of ways in tight games.
Yeah, but I'm not talking about just tight games, though. You know what I'm talking about.
I know what you're talking about, and you can't describe it. You can't put your pin on it because it's just
emotional moments.
I understand that, but that doesn't show up in any book. It doesn't show up in any scorecard. Doesn't show up in anything. It's just it's one of those.
But
like,
it can foreshadow what's to come for this team.
Yeah, pressure. So it's a pressure situation, if you will.
Yeah, pressure.
But I could also argue that two-run games, pressure situations.
How many of those two-run games were against shit opponents? Also, I feel like a lot of those games happened in May when the starting pitching every night was like eight innings, no runs.
Remember that?
And the offense was just also bad, but they were winning games 2-1.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Philip has just lost the respect of the youth league football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this, but Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get the Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
So it was just another, in my opinion, disastrous weekend, even though they exceeded your expectations and actually won a game. I want to talk about because the weekend was one thing, the weekend of baseball was one thing, but also it was the 20th anniversary of 9/11 and the fact that they scheduled the Yankees and Mets to play on 9/11. I don't know if I realized it right away what they were doing when the schedule came out. But I think it was like they couldn't have planned this any better. And I think the ceremony that they did before the game on Saturday, and then all of the interviews that they did during the game, the flashbacks, everything was tasteful, emotional, and well done. And I'm not saying it's hard to do, but at the same time, it is an extremely difficult situation because you're playing a baseball game while still honoring the victims and the heroes of 9/11. And they just did it really well. And like they were talking about how, like Mike Piazza, I thought gave a candid interview where he was like, we didn't know, like when we came back after our 10-day layoff to play in 2001, we were like, what are we doing here? And then the game started and they're like, oh yes, this is why we're supposed to be here. It takes everyone's mind off of it and it takes our mind off of it, even if it's for 2.5, 3.5 hours. And I think that's how sports can play a role in tragedies like this. Yes, we understand sports are silly, but sometimes you just need to have a silly time for a couple hours.
Yeah, it's a distraction, definitely. And I agree. I think they did it well. I love the fact that they were wearing the hats for
FDNY, you know, and the New York Police
fire
Department
trucks
hats.
And the stations and the police. They even had during the Jets game, Matt Rhule on the other side, who from New York, coach of the Panthers, was wearing an FDNY hat as well. So, you know, they bringing the fan bases together in one place, obviously for this that affected, you know, everybody, you know, so much in New York was cool to have everybody in one place. It didn't matter who you were rooting for at that moment. You know, clearly the Mets and the Yankees were on the field together as well. Fan bases, same thing. It just, you know, in that moment, it doesn't matter. It just, and yeah, you're right. Baseball's a distraction. Baseball is something that we all enjoy watching. It gets us frustrated. It gets us fired up, but it also is something where when you're watching it, you're just emotionally in that moment throughout the time, especially, you know, New Yorkers are high emotion people. I think, I think the New York fan base, high emotion people, you know, maybe we're biased, but I'd say probably a little bit more than a lot of other fan bases. And you can get lost in that moment, which is a good thing. So.
And the game was a really exciting game. I mean, so was Saturday. So was Sundays, but the Yankees
Sunday won. Sunday was a fun game to watch.
They won the Saturday game. It was a fun back and forth game right down to the end. Chapman, again, makes it scary. Even if it was a couple things not his fault, like the Pillar strikeout and then Higgy with the
hell of a play.
But that's a play. If Pillar just runs immediately, he probably is safe. And then that whole inning is differently. So kind of caught a break there that Pillar didn't realize it was a pass ball.
But I mean, the play, when you look at it from the angle behind first base down the line,
real tough play,
tough play to get that across the body, pretty much blind, essentially just, you know, Rizzo being in the right spot as well.
Yeah.
Does Voit stand on the inside of the bat?
Does Gary make that play? I mean, it's like so many what ifs. Yeah. So it was an emotional, you said you were watching 9/11 stuff all weekend. I mean, It was hard not to. Every single channel had it, even if, because it does get heavy. You watch it for an hour and it's just like, oh man.
I mean, when the weekend first came into it, I was like, I'm not going to watch this stuff. I do it, during this time over the years. And I don't know, it's a magnet. It draws me back to it. I feel like I almost have to watch some of it to almost like put myself back in that. I feel like I owe it to myself to put myself back in there. It's like a weird thing, but it's still one of those days, man, that's just like very, very hard to process even 20 years later, you know, going back through all the emotions of that day, not knowing where your family members are, understanding. It's just
you were crazy. In college, right?
I was in college. I remember waking up with my roommate and we were just like glued, and I was trying to get a hold of my sister who was working in the city at the time, couldn't get a hold of her because all the phone lines were, you know, the cell phone towers at that point were just like jammed up. Nobody could get through to anybody. So it was just put yourself back in there and you can, I can feel like in my gut again. And it's just it's a horrible feeling, but for whatever reason, it's like, I got to go back there, you know, when that happens as well.
I do that as well. I did a little bit. There's this new documentary that Hulu is on Hulu, and then I think
every single one of these streaming platforms has a new documentary about 9/11.
No, I don't know exactly who put it together. It might be PBS or something. I think it's called One Day in America. And I watched the first episode, and I just could not watch any more of it because it's sort of like unseen footage and untold stories of people who are there, and it's so fucking tragic. So if you want to go watch it, like, it was a good documentary. It's a multi-episode thing. I just watched the first one and I was just like, I can't do that. it's way too emotional sometimes. But again, I thought it was the right amount of emotion on Saturday and also some positivity that they talked about, which I think is important. And it's like how the country came together and how the baseball players at the time were able to help some first responders and some people that needed some time just with a distraction or a little bit of help or whatever it was. So like those positive stories are also good to hear. But yeah, those are my thoughts on the ceremony. Got a couple mailbag questions before we wrap it up. You ready?
Let's do it.
Jeffrey Demarius, he DM'd me this. He said, I wanted to drop by with a quick thought. This team doesn't operate well with its normal roster and has not for years. In 2019, they were the best when it was next man up, and they battled and did the little things. Then hit a crap ton of homers, no doubt, but they did other things to win. This year, they are mediocre and inconsistent when the regular players are in, but when COVID hit them, then injuries, they changed, became more dynamic. And he just goes on to talk about how when Glaber and Gio came back, it seemed like this team change mentalities. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, you know, yeah, this is what we talked about last game. This is why, you know, having Glaber and Gio in there, Gio, you know, not seemingly healthy, Glaber just booting balls. The dynamic of the team changed too, because they stopped doing the things that were working for them, moving, hitting and running.
What's the blame there, though? Isn't that kind of...
It's a manager. It's a managerial decision.
Also, isn't it kind of Cashman to blame? Because...
No,
hold on, let me finish. as you said, it's a managerial decision. But at the same time, what if the starting roster of players are not good at doing those things, right? So the thing that helps you win, hitting and running, stealing bases, playing aggressive, playing good defense, putting bat on ball, all those things help them win 13 games in a row. Then they got some guys back. Voit starts going in the lineup more. Glaber and Gio come back. And they don't do those things anymore. Maybe it's partially a managerial decision, but it's partially these players that Brian Cashman put on this roster to start don't do those things, can't do those things. So it's like at a certain point, you're right. Boone's a moron and he's an idiot and he doesn't do simple things like pinch run on a 0-0 count instead of a zero, an 0-1 count. But also, you can only do what the players on the field are capable of doing. Same thing with the bullpen. Yeah, the manager's going to look real stupid when he brings in everyone and everyone blows the game. You can't win with a bad, no matter how good of a manager you are, you can't win with a bad bullpen.
The bullpen, totally different point. Totally different point. The bullpen is in shambles. You can't blame Boone for anything that happens out there anymore. I'm done with that. The players are not there. They don't have the bullets that they need. The roster, when it comes to the position players, yes, you can change that. You can effectively change that.
As we have said for the past, other guys, like we said.
Yeah, as we have said for the past couple, starting lineups out the window. Doesn't matter. Starting lineups don't matter right now. You got to win games. Emotions, gone. Doesn't matter. No loyalty at this point. You just got to win ball games. You're a game out of the wild card now. You're not in the playoffs. Change something up. He doesn't have the pulse of the team. He's said to be the player's manager. He doesn't have the pulse of the team where he can effectively do something to get the guys going, to get something, just shake it up a little bit differently, change the lineup. You know, we've seen Girardi would do that. Torrey would do that occasionally and change up a particular lineup just to get something different out there. Even if it doesn't work, it's different. It's not the same thing. It's not the insanity definition, going back out there and banging your head against the wall. Change it up. Get rid of a different guy. I understand when Velasquez goes down, that's not something that anybody wants to see because he's an emotional guy. He brings some fire to it.
But no one thinks Andrew Velasquez is the actual answer.
No, but the thing is like they need as many pitchers on their roster as they humanly can. Andrew Heaney,
Clark Smith's just going to get sent back down, okay? Velasquez will be back. Everyone chill the fuck out.
Right, but they need as many arms as possible on a given day. So I get what's happening there. It's just that he's not able to go in and effectively change anything to try to get something going. And when this team was winning, they were doing different things. They were not playing the same way that this team was, quote, built to win. Because it was built wrong.
So it's an indictment on the manager and on the general manager.
It's an indictment on, yes, fine. But right now, the general manager, the players are out there. The players are out there. Do what you will. This is a managerial decision.
Continuing with the Boone discussion, Lee Jones, our buddy from Liverpool, England, sent in a question. He wants to know if the Yankees will make a move at manager for, quote, the new manager bounce. I guess that is a soccer term or a football term where teams change manager and it actually had the team rebounds. It has little to do with the actual change that was made and more just that guy's gone. Someone new is in. Let's go, baby. If they were going to do that, that needed to happen in July, not September, middle
of
September.
Well, it can't happen now. I think he's more speaking to like the offseason as I think that's probably what he's
speaking about. Yeah, but those things don't work in the offseason. Those things only work in season.
They had to have done it earlier. Again, you bring a totally different type of person in, someone that's, you know, maybe a little bit more old school, a little fired up. I keep saying Willie Randolph because that's who I wanted in. It was never going to happen. I understand that. But one can dream. Just, you know, a baseball guy. Just bring in a baseball guy that has a little bit of a different thing. He's young at heart. Bring him in.
All right. So at this stage, we're on September 13th. The Yankees are about to play the final 2 weeks of the season. They're going to make the playoffs or not?
I have no idea. I it would not surprise me if they missed the playoffs at this point. The way that Toronto is playing, and I know they can't play like this forever. Maybe Toronto is playing like this, you know, 2 weeks too early, and they
find
a cold
streak. Did you
see
what they did to Baltimore this weekend?
Yeah, 22 runs, annihilated them.
No, but did you see how they did it in that doubleheader? Okay, I think it was Saturday doubleheader. they were losing by 5 runs and ended up coming back and winning. And then in the second game, they were being no hit into the 7th inning, which was the final inning. They scored 11 runs in the 7th inning.
They're a
dangerous
team.
I know it's Baltimore, but the thing is, they play, I said, Baltimore and Minnesota so many times down the stretch.
Yes.
So they're going to keep hitting.
They're going to keep hitting, and they're going to win games. That's so unless they fall into an elongated cold streak, they're going to be tough to surmount, really. And then you look at Boston, and I'm telling you, Oakland and Seattle are in the rearview mirror. They're not far off. Two games away from the Yankees. They're right there. So you have to play baseball well enough to not only beat either the Blue Jays or the Red Sox, but you also have to play more than two games better of the Mariners and the Oakland Athletics, who are also on your ass. And the way that this pitching staff is, like, to me, that's the thing. The pitching staff is not getting any better.
It's not there. I know Garrett Cole's supposed to start on Tuesday. The bullpen is an absolute dumpster fire.
Yeah.
Every night, it's a crapshoot if the bullpen is going to get it done. You can't win games consistently.
They have too many guys out. Loizaga was such a dagger in that moment.
Chad Green was their best relief pitcher. They lost their best relief pitcher.
Can't pitch. Chad Green cannot pitch at the end of a game that's close. He gives up a
home
run
every time.
I mean, at least he makes it. He's not giving up as many home runs as Chad Green is, for God's sakes.
What's your confidence level in a save situation with Chapman?
You know, 50. 5?
Yeah. Okay.
Maybe 60% as he gets.
Final question, and we're going to wrap it up. Give me a quick gut answer. Does the Yankees making the playoffs dictate whether Aaron Boone returns as manager next year?
My gut reaction and what's going to happen? No, it should not. No.
So
I have to say no, because
they get into the playoffs or not get into the playoffs. He's gone either way. I guess the only way he saves his job is they win the pennant.
Yeah, sure. But even then, you shouldn't.
Not going to happen.
No, there would be a lot of luck that would go into that as well. Like, I don't know. The offense would have to go scorched earth, like I've talked about. Like, that's the only way this team is going to win, is if the offense goes insane and they start just hitting.
You know what they need to do? Do you remember they hit like 400 with runners in scoring position on that 13-game win streak? Yeah. If they hit 400 with runners in scoring position the rest of the way through October, then they've got a chance.
And that has nothing to do with Aaron Boone at all.
All right. That's going to do it. Another miserable weekend. We will be back at you at some point this week. The final stretch. Let's see what else can happen with this baseball team. We'll talk to you in a couple days.
Hey guys, thanks for listening to the Bronx Pinstripe Show. Make sure you find us on iTunes and subscribe so you can get all new episodes directly onto your phone. If you do like the show, we'd love for you to take a minute and give us a 5-star rating and review in iTunes. It really helps us out and allows us to create more shows. We're on Twitter at Bronx Pinstripes and the same on Facebook. You can always find us there talking Yankee baseball. Thanks again, guys, for your support. Really appreciate it. And go Yankees.